think it's time to discuss your philosophy of drug use as it relates to artistic endeavor.
A three-win series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it. And the Blazers win the series for the first time.
I can't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up. Well, this could change the course of this match.
You know, being slightly insane, you could probably apply for president of basketball operations of the New York Knicks if you wanted to.
No, I think that's actually a pretty... I think that's a pretty good job. Mm. I think... If you take away Phil and you take away the triangle and you take away him antagonizing all the bits, I mean, they've got picks. They've got a potential transformative star. They've got Melo, who's still good.
Mm.
He's good enough that all these contenders are going to be looking to buy him, to get him if he gets a buyout or a cheap trade.
Well, if you're a competent GM, you could probably convince him that going to Houston and playing with Chris Paul and Harden's not a bad idea.
Well, I don't think it's that. I think it's the idea of getting something back, because he wants a buyout, and the Knicks were sort of like, well, why would we do that when you've got value to it?
Yeah,
sell you to someone and get something back.
Mm.
And so that was, and Phil was all for, nah, let's just buy him out because I hate the prick. And I think that was where Dolan just went, I'm not giving away this asset and paying him $25 million for him to go away and not get anything in return. Go fuck yourself.
The best bit of shade from today was, though, and like, this is not confirmed, but it increasingly looks like Paul George partially is going to OKC because they just did not want him to go anywhere where he wanted to go. And that's amazing.
You are so far ahead in terms of, there's so much has happened this week. I went back and I looked at all the stuff that's happened this week. Do you remember the NBA awards? Do you remember when they happened?
Like, that was
this week.
I was going to say, have we talked about them? Like,
no, this is this week. So this week,
oh my God,
Russell Westbrook was crowned most valuable box score for the NBA. There was some fantastic shit take posting from some NBA writer or analyst with a blue tick saying that Russ's MVP actually meant something, unlike KD's ring, which is just that argument has come from someone's ring, and I probably should go back there. Yeah. It was nice to see that everyone thought the NBA awards was a load of toss, and B, it got upstaged by the Ball family turning up on WWE Raw in the same time slot, which was which is very on brand, because basically LeVar Ball is a wrestling heel and is just living that life.
Though it would be funny if the Lakers traded him to OKC for Westbrook. That would be pretty funny.
I doubt he's worth that much. In terms of other awards that were given out, Rookie of the Year went to Malcolm Brogdon because nobody else had played enough. Sixth man was Eric Gordon. You could ask yourself, how sixth was he? Although I went back and looked. He actually, even he started less
games.
He didn't start that often, but he played exactly the same number of minutes that he did before, every game started the previous year. It's just, it's kind of a dumb award, really, because just because you don't start doesn't mean you're not going to play a bunch of minutes.
Well, Ginobili in his absolute heyday never started and still played, average 32 minutes or something.
Iguodala was pretty close in the voting to that one. Bill Russell turned up, and everyone ignored the fact that he is the Beatles and scored all his rings against soft opposition. Dre got Defensive Player of the Year, which he celebrated by turning up dressed for a Skype interview. Just had a jacket and shorts. Awesome. Giannis was most improved.
The NBA is so entertaining. I have to say, there is really.
This was Monday.
This was only Monday
of this week that this was happening.
It doesn't feel like that.
Mike D'Antoni got Coach of the Year, which was ironic because he was in New York thanking sports writers for voting him for something that wasn't getting him out the fucking door.
Well, man, karma's going to bite him on the ass if Melo ends up there and he's got Chris Paul and Melo and wants to run. But anyway.
We'll definitely get to that thing. But so Russ ended up winning. Harden was second in the voting. Russ got 69 first place votes. Nice. Harden got 69 second place votes, which is also nice, but not as nice as getting 69 first place votes. Kevin Durant. This is kind of an illustration of how 2 months late this whole thing is. Kevin Durant, who just got finals MVP and was the superhero of the playoffs for Golden State, Kevin Durant got a grand total of 2 votes.
Unbelievable.
They were 2 points for 2 fifth place votes. Which is the same as Anthony Davis got.
I think there'll be a backlash next year against the highlighting of statistical brilliance for MVP. I think you're going to get a lot heavier weighting towards, which is more traditional, like weighting towards teams that are looking like they're title contenders.
I think the triple double average was had never been seen before. So it wasn't a surprise that it became the thing. And the counter arguments to it were coming from Maury saying, 31-11 is better than 29-11 is better than 30-10-10, whatever he was saying. But I mean, the real thing they need to do is maybe hold the regular season awards less than 2 months out after the end of the regular season, because it was absolute fucking irrelevance.
And that's the thing. It could be awesome as if you had a week off so that all the finals teams could get their shit together and get over some niggling little injuries and whatever, and so
they'd be less likely to rest players at the end of the season that way.
Yeah, that's right. So that's two good effects, and then hold it just before the finals. Russ and Harden going at each other in that series with basically knowing that one finished MVP and the other one was runner-up would just be unbelievably good fun.
Instead of this world where you kind of assumed, sort of knew that one of them had won it, but it wasn't really clear either way. And by the time the awards came out, no one cared because they were all out of the, they'd all first or second round.
All the international, like Giannis wasn't there. He's overseas. All those guys have gone,
They definitely need to revisit that. So that was Monday. Was it Tuesday that Phil Jackson got fired? It was certainly pretty close to it.
It was. No, the Jackson and the Chris Paul thing happened on the same day, so that must have...
No, they're a day apart. Because Woj broke it.
The news Woj that it was happening on the Tuesday, and then it happened the next day. Actually happened the same day the Chris Paul trade happened, but it sort of got pre-announced, I guess.
So we've probably talked a little bit about Phil Jackson getting fired. The reason being, apparently, that Dolan wouldn't buy out Melo, and that Phil wanted him to buy out Melo because he couldn't stand his weird round face hanging around anymore. I think, a lot of people have said Phil was trying to get fired for the entire time he was there because he didn't never really wanted the job. He just liked the $12 million a year, and that's kind of what you got. That's what happens when Phil Jackson has kind of. He hasn't pissed away his legacy, but he's certainly pissed on it repeatedly. And it's been that kind of very dehydrated, very, very strong yellow, stinky piss. It's not sort of a 5 pints of water piss. It's very bad piss. Maybe a faint trace of urinary tract infection.
I can't remember who said it, but someone said it. It's like a filter, and you go back and you look over the rest of his career now, and you sort of, like, you're looking through this filter of the last bit and you're wondering, how much was his man management and how much was just that he had this unbelievable cattle. One of the big problems with a lot of NBA stuff is there's a lot of assumption that people don't change, that they don't change the style of their game, their skill set, their mentality. You know, everyone sort of looks at a player and goes, well, he's never going to be X, or he was X, so he's never going to change. Where, you know, people do change. So maybe Phil was this amazing man manager and he just got old and...
Well, maybe he didn't, though, mate, because he was using the same techniques that had worked for him in the 90s in Chicago and in the aughts in LA. That was just yesterday's methodology. It's a little bit like Bernie Eccleston with Formula One. The shit that worked through the 80s and 90s and 2000s in running Formula One and playing all the manufacturers off against the teams and the circuit promoters and all that stuff off against each other to get a bigger pile, just suddenly stopped working. And yeah, it was yesterday's news. And that's kind of where Phil Jackson is right now. It's interesting that Dolan wouldn't buy out Mello, and that's what got Phil Jackson fired. Doc Rivers wouldn't trade for Mello because his son would have gone the other way. And as a result, Chris Paul got fucked off with a lot of them and ended up getting traded to Houston. Which is what happened either half a day or a day later, depending on which time zone you're sitting in.
How, like, if you were Jerry West and Ballmer, and it increasingly looks like Jerry West has, not the power, but Ballmer is listening to what he's saying. Do you just keep adding younger and younger pieces until Doc just goes, I'm not down for this. Catch you later.
There are some good pieces in the package that they got, but they got seven players, a first round pick, and cash considerations, which ironically turned up in a fantastic series of tweets by my Trailblazers in terms of the Trailblazers welcome our new recruit, cash considerations, money. And then they had a. They had a press conference with cash considerations, and somebody did up a fake basketball reference page for cash considerations. It was just tremendous. But cash considerations went to cover somebody's cap hit. It was like a particularly weird amount of money. It was like $671,000.
Well, I have to say, it's been a great week for superstar general managers / executives, I reckon, because Maury...
Less of a good week for superstar ball hogs who want to continue to be ball hogs for the foreseeable future and don't want to be told to have to share the pill.
Because the way Maury pulled that off, where instead of just signing Chris Paul to a 5-year deal and basically limiting your flexibility and not being able to get any more players around. Like, the way he just went and sort of got all these little, like, half the players in that trade, I didn't even know were in the NBA.
And some of them weren't on the Rockets until about 30 seconds before they did the trade. They just went, look, we'll have you and so, we'll grab you.
So they've made a swing, but they've made a swing where they get a year to see whether Chris Paul and James Harden works. And, like, it'll set them back if he walks at the end of the year. But if it's going really well and you just need another piece to push Golden State, or you think Golden State might be breaking up because they're worried about the luxury tax, then, you know, then you can sign Chris Paul. Like, it's, like, really, really good work. And then Presti goes, well...
Well, this is what happened today, literally, with Paul George going to... going from Indiana to OKC for
Home Depot and
Yabonas and Home Depot, which is again, it's a 1-year rental, so it's a slightly different circumstance with Chris Paul because Chris Paul was a sign and trade, whereas this is literally just we'll trade for final year of your
Chris Paul is its existing contract. He opted in. He had a player option for the last year of his contract. So he opted into his last year.
That seems like an awful lot for a 1-year rental of Chris Paul. Given that Paul George, and I know Paul George isn't Chris Paul. Paul George went for, I suppose there was nothing in that package of players that the only real dead loss in that package of players that the Rockets sent, apart from the first round pick, which will be a low first round pick, is Pat Beverly. And we talked about this too. How is it going to work with Chris Paul and Harden? Not only sharing the ball, given that Harden will go back having to go back to being an off ball two, but also Chris Paul is definitely. I mean, like Chris Paul has historically been a really good defender. He's not Pat Beverly good.
No. Well, especially because, you know, Beverly is there to stop the other player, the other team's best player, and yeah, then
he's a cornerback.
If he hits a couple of big threes, then happy days. Like, is Chris Paul going to be happy to, you know, mate, you're not going to run the play. Harden's going to run the play because you have to chase Steph Curry around for 37 minutes. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Like, D'Antoni's a little bit more flexible a coach in terms of game day rotations than Doc Rivers was. So
certainly. And I mean, El Hassan was pointing out that Chris Paul has long tried to model his game on Steve Nash era 7 seconds or less. So he should be. I mean, he's not the same. He's not quite the same player that he was, but he should be the right sort of dude. It's just how well. I mean, what you're seeing here with this, and was also with PG-13, with OKC, is that teams are so desperate in the circumstance where the Dubs are so dominating that they've got no choice but to team up and form these slightly awkward alliances. This, you know, CP3, James Harden thing. I mean, apparently they've been cooking this up for a while, but it's going to require James Harden probably to concede more. You know, he's going to have to go back to the role that he evolved out of last year and do some different stuff. And it's going to depend how long is he going to stick with it?
Well, I think the thing is, too, that the suggestion that I've seen is just play them as little as possible together. So, you know, basically if Harden sits, Paul's on, and if Paul sits, Harden's on, like, and then you play them for 7 minutes at the start and 7 minutes at the end together.
Yeah, and you can afford to do that in the regular season because, as we've seen, the regular season doesn't really matter. And you can, you can have two formats. You can have the two separate point guards who overlap briefly, maybe just in crunch time for the regular season, and then rejig it for the finals and have this two guard monster.
And I think it is an admission too that Harden was pretty much toasted by the end of the year, fatigue-wise.
I think, yeah, he was. He definitely was.
You know.
And he's everyone was super not... Well, the thing about Harden, the thing that is sort of becoming apparent is that... I know we've said this about a lot of players before, but Harden ain't clutch. He just ain't. He's just jokey-dokey-dokies.
You've got Mr. I've never been past the second round, so...
Yeah, but although... Chris Paul did hit the winner in the series over that first round series they had against the Spurs.
Spurs, yeah.
He hit the game winner in game 7 in that. So he has done that, but he has also melted down. And of course, James Harden has melted down as recently as last month. So it could be interesting. But you know, I think, speaking of not clutch, Paul George, who has, we remember the thing of him ragging at his teammates for not giving him the last shot in one of the playoff games he was playing, even though he's 0-for in every last minute shot, every last second shot he's ever taken in an NBA game, which sort of, it's nice to have that confidence. But
while everyone sort of focuses on offense in the NBA a little bit too much, but
that's because it's entertaining.
Yeah, but a team of Roberson, Paul George, Steven Adams. Man, that is going to be a good defensive team, that team. They're going to be hard to score against.
It's not bad. It's really
especially
not
bad. If George can let Westbrook run things and doesn't have to be Mr. Clutch, doesn't have to be the main generation of points, and goes back to being this, like, you know, Paul George was known for being this just, you know, Kawhi type defensive player.
They got a couple of good parts in that Cameron Payne trade too, didn't they? They got Dougie McFuckers and...
Yeah, there's
the... Taj Gibson? He must be what?
Yeah, Taj Gibson's a free agent, but no, yeah. there's another young guy that they reckon's going to be pretty good that they got from Chicago.
Another guy, Dougie McBuckets. Doug McDermott.
Yep. And then Tibbs, for some reason, traded away a point guard that's really good at one thing for a point guard that's not very good at lots of things. So that one mystifies me.
Yeah, I don't. So Rubio, who I think, you know, we're talking with one of the listeners, Cameron, during the week. I think we've always been generally in on Rubio. I've always felt that just because he doesn't shoot and because he's a little Spanish dude. And maybe also because he had this big rep before he came over, and then he maybe wasn't quite what as good as people thought the YouTube indicated.
Well, I think he had a little bit of that Bogut thing where, you know, Bogut was this amazing offensive player when he first came into the league. Now, not as bad, but, you know, Bogut
now
had
it's
a
just
couple
offensive.
Of...
Yeah.
Hey. Let's just leave that one. But he had a couple of injuries and never really sort of fulfilled his promise. And Rubio's had a couple of bad injuries that sort of don't really get looked at because Minnesota just sucked anyway. So it didn't really make much difference. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like he was the key piece coming back into a final side.
I reckon Rubio for a first, which is probably going to be a low first because it's Utah's first.
Mm.
That's
good. Yeah, good for our boy Dante Exum too. I reckon
very good for him. But it's also one of the things that it was pointed out again by Cameron who tweeted us was to point out that we were talking in previous weeks about, you know, why haven't other teams raided your man Chip Engel and the Spurs shot doctors, backroom staff, and pointed out, found in the fine print, the Timberwolves did at the start of last year hired one of England's backroom dudes, and for some reason might be connected. Rubio started shooting a lot better in the second half of last year, and LaVine started shooting a lot better in the second half of last year.
And they got rid of both of them.
They did.
I tell you what, the pressure makes
you wonder
Tibbs
whether
now.
They thought those things were sustainable. But if those are sustainable improvements, that could be really interesting.
Because Tibbs strikes me as a bit of a Phil Jackson type, not in terms of coaching style, but in terms of I've got my way and I'm going to stick to it. He does not look like he's changed his methodologies that much in that time he had away. You know, he still plays his guys lots of minutes. He still rides them really hard. And look, maybe that'll come to fruition. He's only been there for a year.
Yeah, because he had that very, very well announced. You know, he was touring around the NBA and learning from people and sitting in on stuff. And it looks like he's just still the same old Tibbs, hammering the shit out of people. Also, maybe he broke LaVine and Dunn and Rubio. Maybe they're all broken down.
Well, I think. I'm really excited for Rubio to go to Utah because I think they've got an excellent coaching staff there. Now, if they lose Hayward, it'll drop them, you know, it'll drop them back a fair bit. But I just think Rubio's going to blossom there. I think he's going to have a better, like, Quinn Snyder seems to me to be a guy that finds the strengths of whoever he's got, you know, a little bit like Popovich. He finds the strengths of the guys he's got and he amplifies them. Whereas, you know, there's some good coaches out there, but they need the right personnel to make them work. You know, those flexible coaches are few and far between. So, another one of our boys, Patty Mills, re-signed at the Spurs. So it looks like they're going to go with, you know, whatever.
They're going to roll the ball back out again. Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether they're going to run the ball back out again, but they might. Like the word out of San Antonio is they've got real big raps on that the young point guard, the rookie,
DeJounte Murray. Yeah,
yeah. So
Andre Iguodala's got a meeting with them, but at Woj, who's just joined ESPN and suddenly burst into life after being quiet over the last couple of days, pointed out that actually that meeting was at Iggy's request. It wasn't the Spurs particularly chasing after Iggy. Golden State have re-signed Livingston, and of course they threw the super duper ultra mega max to Steph, giving him $201 million over 5 years. And there's no player option after 4 years, so that he's going to be there for 5 years unless they trade him because there is no trade clause. But mind you, who's going to trade for a $200 million contract? you'd want to be, particularly in a flattening cap environment. It looks like the cap's $99 million this year. And it's just going to go up a couple of million in the next couple of years, maybe 102, 106, I think the figures I saw.
And for all the talk that Durant's, you know, the alpha in that team, Curry's still the talisman. He's still the guy that made it work originally. And
he's the guy they paid first, which I think tells you, you know, they weren't tripping over themselves to pay Durant before they paid Curry.
Yeah.
But also I think that was kind of good faith as well because Curry had been on – he'd been underpaid, relatively speaking. I mean, $44 million isn't being underpaid if you're sweeping the streets, but if you're you know, double MVP, then maybe it is. Maybe it is. Who else got paid? Blake Griffin got paid. He got $173 million this afternoon over 5 years. So the Clippers have locked into Blake.
Someone posted today that under the player rankings they did at the start of last season, you know, like, I can't remember if it was Kevin Pelton's, like, statistical ones or whatever, but, like, out of the top 16 players in the league from the start of last season, 14 are now in the Western Conference.
Yeah, it's pretty lopsided.
That's why I think Hayward's going to go. I think he's going to look at the Eastern Conference and go, oh, man, this is just, like, you're just guaranteed, like, a really good team. I'm going to make the Eastern Conference Finals, no worries.
So it sounds like Hayward's movements are he's going down to Miami first, and then he's going to Boston, and then he's going to come back to Utah. So Utah get the final,
well,
final shot to chat.
I don't know if you saw this, but Zach Lowe very enigmatically tweeted and did sort of hint at something this on one of his podcasts this week, that he has one extra secret meeting that is not included in that public list of who he's meeting. And I just wonder if it's the Spurs. Because I was trying to think where else he could possibly go, you know. And once upon a time, you would have said the Cavs.
How long ago was this information out? Because I'm literally talking about something Woj said on television, like, 2 hours ago. So.
Yeah, no, this was two hours ago, and it mentioned, like, he'd said the same thing. You know, hey, this is Hayward's meetings. This is where he's going. You know, Miami and Boston, and then back to Utah. And then he threw on the extra tweet, and there might be one extra secret meeting that isn't publicized. And it was almost like, I've heard a whisper, and I know who it is, but I don't. You know, I haven't sourced it well enough to.
I'm
to
just
say
gonna throw this out because I don't want to get I want to keep some reputation as being an ESPN newsbreaker because this new bloke is cutting my fucking lunch and I'm not liking it much.
I tell you what, one of the things I really enjoyed and you and I
the one thing that everyone else at ESPN has at their advantage, I mean, Woj is fantastic at breaking news, but he is balls awful on camera. So they will always have that over him.
He's awful on camera. He's not actually that good a writer. Like,
he's got nothing interesting to say, but he's a fantastic reporter.
Yeah, he's very dry. But
literally, it was like listening to something. It should be the most exciting time for him all year is right after midnight Eastern US Eastern time on ESPN
on
Sports Center.
All his drafts.
He's on Sports Center with Scott Van Pelt. And he's being asked all the breaking stuff that's just gone vlog, and he sounded like a man reciting tax file numbers. He just sounded like a fucking accountant telling you about tax brackets and allowable deductions. It was the driest, dullest shit. It didn't help that he started off with Tony Snell. I mean, who opens with Tony Snell? Who gives a fuck? Tony Snell's going back to the Bucks. Oh, good. Well done, Snoop. Good, great scoop you've got there, bro.
So you and I have been having a little bit of banter on the private messages
about banter.
Mark Stein and how interesting it was where Mark Stein was going.
Well, here's the thing:
go.
A gentle listener, Bezo, messaged me and said it's going to be just as interesting to see where Mark Stein goes as what happens in free agency. And I went back, no, it won't. And then, like, a day or two later, all the fucking Chris Paul stuff happened, and the Paul George stuff. And I was like. Remember that time you sent me a message saying it'll be just as interesting where Mark Stein goes? And what's interesting is when Mark Stein kind of signed off just before midnight US time, US Eastern time, from ESPN, because he worked right up to the end of his deal effect
contract
with ESPN.
Well, and that's
and he said I'll be back in the future. So it doesn't sound like he's got a gig to jump to on July the 1st. It sounds like he's
well,
I reckon he's probably got a longer contract, but he agreed to finish up on the 1st.
Reading between the lines from some of the stuff I've heard, not only did he have a contract, but his contract explicitly stopped him from talking to anyone else about new employment.
Yeah, he probably had a non-compete and a non.
Yeah, something like that. But I like
what was
how,
nice is one of the other ESPN guys. It was Tim Kalishaw who writes for. Actually, I don't think he's an ESPN guy, but he appears on one of those ESPN talking head shows. He works for the Dallas newspaper, whatever that is. I don't know. I don't think it's part of the Disney group. He's just like a dude who turns up on ESPN. But somebody tweeted him saying, "Oh well, you know, it's pretty hard, pretty bloody awful that they made Mark Stein work right up to the July the 1st." And Kalishaw said he wanted to, he chose to.
Mm. And that's what I was going
to
say.
He wanted to do the honourable thing.
It's funny how.
It's a great advertisement for his work. Just to finish off that thought, he is also in the shop window, so he can show off how good he is.
Yeah, that's true. He was killing it. Like, he was making Woj look terrible. Like, he was out scooping him left, right, and center. You know, by a good 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know how much Woj could do though, because you know Woj was almost silent for the last couple of days.
Mm. Even like a month ago, it was almost like after he got. After he got sacked, but he was still working, Stein just went ballistic with it. It was almost like he was less cautious in breaking stuff because it's like, what are you going to do? Fire me?
Yeah, I think he wasn't waiting for the second confirmation. It was just he was going to go on the first, which is.
Yeah. But I also have a sneaky suspicion that there's a lot of team executives and like the people who work in that industry that. Not leak that information, but a sources, right? And you build up relationships and stuff. I wonder whether they are uncomfortable with Woj going to ESPN and what that sort of does to the power dynamic, and whether or not there was just, we might give this to Steiny Moe first before, you know, just a little bit, just to make sure that the balance isn't there.
It sounds like there's a young bloke, Shami, I can't remember his surname, who's sort of taken over the breaking of shit dynamic, which should be quite interesting. Anyway, this is fucking boring for anybody who's not massively inside basketball.
So I think that's all the point guard market sort of dried up. Like, you know, everyone thought point guards were going to get paid massively this year, but because there was a lot of good point guards in the draft and the teams that really needed a point guard drafted a point guard and sort of went, well, we're not going to then go out and get a gun point guard. That sort of killed that market well and truly dead. Like, where's George Hill going to end up? Doesn't look like he'll go to San Antonio. He's not going to Minnesota. He's not at the Jazz.
I suppose they don't really need another guard, do they? Where they've kept Patty, they've got DeJuante, they've got whatever's left of
Tony Parker. They've got another young guy as well, Bryn something.
Yes. His name is Tony Ginobili. I think you'll find.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. He's still kicking around and probably pay for like $50,000 next year or some ridiculous amount.
Oh, it'll depend how he comes back from that awful knee thing. Because that wasn't.
Yeah. I did like someone tweeted out the fact that Patty Mills is going to get paid more than the entire salary cap for an AFL side next year.
isn't Delvin Delly already on that money?
Yeah.
Delly's already on as much as that. Oh, I actually felt that the Patty Mills was a slight underpay for the value he
got. It was reported that way. It was reported that he has taken less to stay at San Antonio.
Was it 4 years?
It's about 11.5 or 12 a year,
I think.
Like 12
a year, and I'm sure Delly's on about that. And they're talking about 4 years, 60 is the offer from San Antonio for Joe Inglis, which is stupid money.
Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers are also interested, which is ironic because the Clippers cut him after. They cut him after preseason training in 2014.
If I was him, I would just rock up to that meeting, and as soon as Doc start talking, just laugh at him. And every time he says something, just laugh. And then, are you finished? Oh, okay. See you guys. Yeah. Nice talking to you.
And then you'd end up playing for the Orlando Magic. I think that would be an awful fucking idea. And this is why you are not.
Mate, Orlando, I've got a competent GM now and a good coach.
Orlando will not be relevant for a very long time, even in the East, because they don't, they've got parts that don't work and they don't even know why they don't work, whether they will ever work or what they're even worth. So,
well, yeah, what are you going to do? But their last GM wanted to sign Chandler Parsons this year, so.
But they need to, I mean, they need to start again. I mean, Aaron Gordon, is he any good? Who fuck knows? You know, there's so many bits that are just sort of, hazonia. Meh? I mean, there's so much stuff in Orlando that is just faulty. They turn Serge Ibaka into fuck all of Nout. It's a shambles. It's a shambles. So they really have to start again down there. As I say, the only thing they have in their favour is they are in the East. But the thing about the East is that a lot of the superstars are gone, but a lot of the promising second, you know, up-and-coming kids are in the East. I mean, those Bucks are going to be really interesting. The East is going to be a little bit like, you know, it's going to be like the under-20s in the NRL. The quality's not going to be as high, but the games are going to be fun.
See, if you're Toronto and you're looking at the East, it's almost like, well, we really should be running this back because we're going to win a lot of games.
I'm really bored too because they're because I mean they bring back just, you know, just their starting five. They're well over the cap, so that kind of hurts them a lot. I noticed that if Golden State miss out on if they can't bring back Iggy or if Iggy, the price to bring back Iggy is too much, they're apparently going to pursue Rudy Gay, which could be quite interesting.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that in terms of Toronto, although it's been a while since that was an issue. But Golden State are more than willing to dive into the tax sort of headlong, like Scrooge McDuck diving into his coin vault. But I don't know whether Toronto are, because why there's opportunity there in the East, they're still not better than the best team in the East. And it's a question of whether they're better than the second and third best teams. They were only marginally better than the Bucks, and the Bucks will be better next year.
That's the thing, is like, okay, you make the Eastern Conference Finals and then you get beaten in four or five games. Well, okay, like,
how close were you?
Yeah, you know, at a like, and for some teams like Detroit, all Detroit want to do is make the eight and get beaten in the first round. That's their goal.
They're not even gonna
I don't think Masai's built that way. Like, he's built to try and win it all. So, and
that's why he's going to be at the New York Knicks.
It's fun, like. Can they just go and hire a good, competent GM and give him 3 years to do his job properly?
No.
Like,
because it's just Jim Dolan.
I know. Like, there's a guy sitting out there.
Or as other people call him, Robert Sarver with a guitar.
Oh, yes. I can't talk. Like, why the hell are my guys trying to talk to Blake Griffin?
Because they can't handle not being relevant. Because they've got an owner who just can't handle not being relevant. And that's exactly what you see with Jim Dolan. It's exactly what you see with Robert Sarver. It's exactly what you see with your man fucking Steve Ballmer. You know, he's making more intelligent moves, but it's also he can't stand being he's not going to be able to.
I don't know whether I agree with that. I think what he doesn't want to look like is incompetent. And I think there's a difference.
He was responsible for Microsoft for many years.
I realize that.
So he wants to change his public perception as being responsible for incompetence.
I actually think he does. Yeah. I think he would be happy if they were growing, like if they were building, if people said, you know, this is a really smart organization and they're doing things the right way and they're going to be good again, you know, because Ballmer's building the team. What I don't think is, like, he doesn't want to, I think the last thing he wants to be do is to be laughed at like, you know, like the Knicks or like the Suns are for, you know, this owner that just constantly can't, you know, has no patience and every 2 years just wants to, you know, have another plaything to, yeah, well, even, you know,
They haven't let whatever, him out, whatever box him out the they put it, yeah.
Whatever box they put Vivek in, he has not been let out of it yet because they have not done anything stupid.
Who do you reckon's
still,
the happiest?
Still a week to go.
Who do you reckon's the happiest person about 3 years, $201 million for Steph? I reckon it's Mike Conley because now he's no longer the highest paid player in the NBA and he no longer has Charles Barkley slagging him off like, who the hell's Mike Conley, the highest paid player in the NBA? I can kick his ass.
Yeah,
just the kind of intelligence you get listening to Muppets like that.
Yes, that's right. Well, and it's just like, well, you're an idiot. I think like the guy, the sort of players that the Suns should be chasing are the Patty Mills, Joe Ingles.
Well, get an opportunity there.
You know, like guys that are not necessarily starter level guys. But are good veterans, good teammates, will teach you young guys to do the right thing.
Yeah, they just—they just need. They basically they need a starting four of Crosby, Nash, Stills, and Young. They need to teach their children well. They just need someone to come in and help train up their prospects to make sure Devin Booker turns into a good NBA player because he's got the skills to do it. But you know, you don't want him to be remembered as being someone who racked up 70 in a loss.
Whereas you if you get Blake, then all of a sudden you're trying to win with Blake as the focal point.
Yeah.
And then the focus is not on developing your young guys. Like, you know, that's why I like Flip Saunders bringing KG back to Minnesota when they had all, you know, when all their guys were really young. Because KG's not going to help you win, but he's going to teach some really, really good habits to those young guys. Yeah, I don't know. It's so depressing, my team. It really is.
Well, at least your team are visible. My team haven't been visible at all, apart from the cash considerations tweet, which was tremendous. They haven't done a single fucking thing in free agency. And that's fine. They made a move in the draft and they traded up and got a guy that they apparently were keen on. But and they did fantastic business with turning whichever Plumlee it was into Nurkic and a pick, which was what they rolled over to get this to trade up for the 10. But the problem is that middling Western Conference teams have a very, very limited ceiling in the current NBA. And they can't all sort of move to the east of the country.
Yep.
It's disappointing for
them. What do you do? Like the fact that the cap flattened has really sort of thrown a spanner in the works for a lot of these teams that projected stuff to keep happening the way it did, and then it hasn't. And it's sort of almost like it's almost like a, you know, walking outside from a nice hot house into, you know, subarctic temperatures and getting that cold slap of wind on your face.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
That's right. You just don't go outside.
No, the inside of the house is cold too.
It'll be really interesting to see how this year and next year. Oh man, look, the Western Conference next year is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, I think the Eastern Conference is going to be a lot of fun too because there's going to be more unknown and more prospects and more variability. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of lopsided ass kickings in the West. You just have to wait for those big head to head games. But I still think the Warriors will be better than everyone else because the Warriors are always better than everyone else.
Yep.
The way they're currently constructed, and the way they'll continue to be constructed.
So I was wondering, how's your fast bowling going at the moment? Have you been doing much net practice?
No, I haven't. And I should the thing is, I'm not a scab, so I'm not interested I'm declining. I am not available for selection for Australia because I'm not a fucking scab labourer.
I think every Australian male between the ages of 16 and 80 is going to have to fill out a census type form for Cricket Australia saying, will you actually cross the picket lines and play for Australia against England in the Ashes? Because that might be the only way they'll get a team, it looks like.
How far away is the first test of the Ashes series?
Well, this summer, isn't it? So 3 months? 2 months?
It'll be probably November, I think, is when they normally.
Yeah.
They normally have that sort of tranche of test matches, so they've got time, but they seem very confident that the players are going to crumble, you know. But there's what certainly was the language that they put. So in their release when on the 1st of July when the existing agreements fell through. They said, well, we're just going to put the money into the grassroots because grassroots is grassroots, grassroots. The fact that they've always had the ability to put money into the grassroots and it wasn't paying the players under the same revenue sharing agreements that had been in place for the past 18 years that were stopping them from doing so. The thing that annoys me so much about this is that it's a disingenuous argument. It's a faulty, illogical, disingenuous argument that they're using to try and justify pulling the money back. And that's not cool. You wouldn't accept that in any... And the annoying thing is whenever I see some fucking bogan gronk tweeting at Dave Warner saying, you guys get paid too much, get back to work. I'm like, you wouldn't accept this in your work, you fucking toothless cunt. Why are you expecting it to... Just because some dude gets paid to play a game instead of, you know, carry bricks on a building site. What the fuck difference does it make?
Well, it all comes back to that. The fact is, the guys at the top now are going to get paid for the next 5 or 6 years of their careers no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, if they effectively get fired by Cricket Australia, then they just become Chris Gayle and they go and play T20 and they make probably more money than they would make for Cricket Australia. But the thing is, they're withdrawing their labour. They're doing this because they're doing it for the next generation because... If you're getting paid a set amount, it's really easy to be squeezed further and further and further down and hide the money. But if it's a fixed percentage of the revenue, then you have to do financial reports and say, well, our revenue is X and here's your share. And
that
it has to be...
That fuckhead Dennis, what's his name? Dennis Does Cricket. Because Jimmy Neesham, the New Zealand cricketer, sort of had some very sharp tweets on the subject and Dennis the dickhead, whatever his fucking deal is, Twitter hero, popped up and said, oh, clearly you don't know that the big BBL media partner's going broke. What a moron. And sort of, that's irrelevant.
That's got nothing to do with it.
It does. Like, therefore there's nobody who wants to pay for the Big Bash League? That network will be afloat by the time those bids go in. It'll have Rupert Murdoch's money behind it, or Lachlan Murdoch's
like
money
that,
behind
that's a political power play anyway, where they're trying to force governments into changing media ownership laws. Like, they've essentially bankrupted Ten to try and change the ownership laws.
Yeah.
Like, it's got nothing to do with fucking cricket. And the other thing is, like, have a look at the South African Big Bash or whatever their T20 is going to be called. And they basically did the opposite to Australia and they sold the franchises to anyone that wanted to buy them. And they went for big money.
That's what the IPL did.
Yeah, that domestic T20 comp is not going to get less popular. And the fact is that it's populated mostly by unknown locals, like all of them, like, it's populated by state cricketers with a few either older or younger or fringe players from, you know, none of the test players are really playing in the Big Bash. Like, the success of the Big Bash has got nothing to do with the national side.
Because usually it's Australia are playing internationally.
Playing test cricket.
On the off days, exactly right. It fits in around it. And that's fine because you can make personalities out of the teams themselves. Or out of these young guns who kind of come in, and because it's sort of a short attention span league, people just come in and you know, I mean, like Ben Dunk becomes a hero, or fuck, who's the Heat's gun batsman?
Chris Lynn
got himself an Australian job on the basis of just bashing the shit out of stuff and becoming a minor celebrity over the course of the Big Bash League last year. But when he disappears, you can always find someone else to kind of carry the narrative. Because I mean, all it really is just, you know, holiday television narrative.
And the other thing is too, it's a comp you can probably, if you hit a bit of a run of form, you can go on a bit of a streak, like as a player. So you can even be a young or a fringe player and have a really hot streak and have a really good tournament.
Yeah. A tournament's the right word for it, because it is a little bit like a World Cup, like where you you can get in a bit of form and bang in a bunch of goals and you can become a superhero. I mean, and there's been dudes who've built a long club career on the basis of being good at a international tournament for a couple of weeks. The number of contracts Davor Šuker got from his performance at the 98 World Cup for Croatia, or Karol Poborský in the Euro 96, or things like that. There's so many players who are like that, who are able to get so many contract after contract after contract at club level as a result of just being informed at the right time over the course of a month in summer.
Yep. I did ask Peter Laylor. I was like, how does the board get fired? Because I actually wonder whether it comes to that, whether the states go,
whether this becomes like a Australian Rugby Union deal where they're all asked to explain themselves or fuck off. Well, I think what will happen is if they don't resolve the pay deal in, by the time the, let's say the state one day tournament rolls around, because that happens sort of September, October, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They still schedule that for, which is a dumb fucking idea, to schedule that for a month and put it on fucking B-grade Channel 9, you know, runoff channels during the day when no one can watch it. When they could sell it to, you know, a pay TV provider who'd love to have that that content, because they'd get much more value out of it.
Or, you know, shake the format up and do something with it. Like there would be ways to make that stuff more attractive.
Lots of stuff you could do with it, but it is it's embarrassing and it's a fucking shambles.
So Henny, it was like, that's a really interesting question that I might now go investigate.
Yes.
Because yeah, like you just wonder whether they get to a point where whoever, because like it is a board, it's an elected board. Yeah. Someone's got to elect them, and they're like a little bit like Dolan with Phil, like, you know, we're paying you guys to make this work, and because of your political leanings or whatever, you're not making it work. The players aren't going to change their mind. Okay, well, we'll just get a new board. Just get one that sorts it out, because
this is not working.
This is not happening.
Although the states are probably hoping that they get a whole bunch more money for grassroots as well. I mean, that's how the whole thing's been sold to them. It's interesting that the ACA and the sort of the days before the deadlines basically said, Cricket Australia, can you put a grown up on the phone? Because we're sick of talking to you. Like they were saying, look, get Sutherland back here and he needs to sort it out. And then there's all these stories about this will be Sutherland's greatest thing of his entire work tenure. And then silence for a day and then the MOU lapsed. It was kind of, oh, good job, Sutherland. You fucking nailed that one, bro. Great bit of fucking industrial negotiation.
It's ridiculous that he's basically delegating this. One of the most important things, and that the other thing that I found really interesting.
It's almost like he doesn't want to have his name associated with it because he knows it's toxic.
Yeah. There was an interest. Bredig's just been knocking this stuff out of the park and being really impartial about his reporting. Like, it's been informative. And it does not make Cricket Australia look good. Like, I'm sure Cricket Australia don't feel like it's impartial.
Yeah,
but he
doesn't
is
look
just
impartial because it's not biased in favour of Cricket Australia, like
that,
a lot of the.
That's right. Like, he is actually just reporting the information that's out there. And one of the really interesting things was when that guy from Rio Tinto took over, the language from Cricket Australia changed from "you guys are our partners" to "you guys are our employees." Like, the official language between them basically changed to "you are we own you and you'll do what we say" from, you know, "hey, we're all in this together, let's try and make it work."
Which also
that's pretty damning.
It also undermines the whole idea that this is about the grassroots and giving back, when it's really, it's clearly a cash grab. They're trying to rake cash back to spend on shit that they want to do, like fucking media. And the grassroots thing is a marketing furphy. It's just designed to win over hearts and minds. But it's bullshit. It's just fucking bullshit.
And that was the other thing. Peter Lawler sort of retweeted a whole heap of grassroots people saying, well, we get no money from Cricket Australia. Our greens are run by our club fees. You know, we've never seen someone, we've never seen an official, you know, we've never seen a cent. We've never seen this. So, you know, is grassroots like junior Australian sides? Is grassroots,
academy?
Or Australia A tours, or you know, like what do they see as the grassroots? Because the grassroots certainly don't feel like they're getting the cash.
It's
so.
Not great. It's spin. It's bullshit. And that's also, it's and people can see through it. I mean, not everybody does, but people can see through. It's disingenuous. It's coming to the public and saying one thing, and it's not true. And you can go fuck yourself. It's not acceptable. Not acceptable.
All right.
And they're terrified of AFL. I'm not sure why, because the AFL can't even run a fucking tribunal correctly. I don't know if you caught this during the week, and it was a bit odd because you're not into AFL. It's a bit hard to pick it up, but apparently a dude from Richmond, who's apparently a nice dude normally, but he managed to knock some other dude out in the game, and he went to the tribunal, and he had character witnesses speak on his behalf, basically. Basically, he tried to get off by having Malcolm Turnbull and Waleed Ali say nice things about him. And this did not work.
But it worked in the first instance. And then the AFL appealed against their own tribunal and got it reinstated to probably what it should have been. But what the hell does... Like, it's not like... Okay, character references would be fine if he swore at an umpire. But it's a physical contact thing. It's like you hit him.
Judge the act. It was probably accidental, but you did knock the dude out. So
you should have like a you know, this is what you get for doing this. I don't care whether you're Mother Teresa. You've knocked the dude out. It's 4 weeks. See you later.
Not subjective. I mean, it shouldn't. You don't need the extra level of subjection on top of that. And that's the thing. I mean, he obviously the reason I thought it was funny is because he appealed to the highest office in the land to help get him off, and Malcolm Turnbull, because as we know, the gold logie is the highest office in the land, and that didn't work.
You've been waiting on that one all week, haven't
you? That's literally the only reason I wanted to mention, because it's the AFL, and I don't give a fuck. It's a terrible
I did
sport.
Wonder why we were talking
they
about
both
this.
Terrible people. I didn't even understand what the fuck the story was about. It was like, like people, and why like people were complaining that he got 2 weeks, and then the AFL were protesting their own decision. It was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Think the AFL appealed their own tribunal's decision. You have a really well-run system there, you fuckhats.
One of the things that I really liked about AFL when I first started was they had some fairly clear rules about things. Like, you know,
don't
rugby
hit
league
in the head really hard and knock them out.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. Like in rugby league, if you hit someone above the shoulders, it was all about intent. And a referee on the field while running around and puffing is supposed to be able to gauge intent. Whereas AFL, it's like if you touch them above the shoulders, it's a penalty. No, mate, you touched him above the shoulders. I don't care that he headbutted your arm. It doesn't matter. You touched him above the shoulders. It's a penalty. Free kick. Let's keep going.
Free kick, Hawthorn.
Free kick, but give that sentence its full use. The clarity of it, and the clarity in the fact that players could just like that, they might try and argue, but they knew the futility, and most times they would be arguing as they were sprinting away because they knew they were never going to change the course of that free kick. Whereas rugby league, it's sort of like, well, you know, go to the video box and should he get sent off or should it just be play on? And it's just like,
I don't know whether you've watched any AFL recently, any NRL recently, but the bunker has just, it's got some infection and it's just spreading across the, it's just taking over the game like some sort of fungal infection. It's just, oh, we're back in the bunker again. Oh, good.
Oh, dear.
These guys again. Speaking of sports that are really well run, FIFA finally released the report into how bent and dodgy the bidding processes for the 2018 and 2022 World Cups were. Amazingly, the Qatar bid, the one that everyone has been going, this one's dodgy, came off as being not dodgy enough to do anything about. It was a whole lot of, yeah, you guys had a meeting and there might have been some stuff, but we can't prove
or, it. Or it was so dodgy that nothing was dug up in massive inverted
commas. Well, either that or they did a much better job of covering their tracks. They did a better job of covering their tracks than a certain country in the South Pacific who you and I both might have passports for. So the Australian bid was implicated in terms of hiring dudes who knew various people who sat on the bid committees and on the FIFA boards and digging up dirt on stuff. And at one point,
we're incompetent at being bad, is what you're trying to say.
Well, and improper payments were made, which means you made the payments to the improper people. You should have made them to the proper people. So Ben Buckley, who was the FFA executive at the time, has been rung through the ringer for this. Frank Lowy, even less so. And sadly, fucking Les Murray has been dragged into this because he was on the FIFA ethics committee, but he was clearly doing the bidding of the Australian bid committee because he was emailing his bosses on the ethics committee saying, "I've heard there's some really dodgy shit going on in the English bid and this." And then he was subsequently emailing the Australian bid committee going, "Yeah, we got him a good one. We'll see how this works out." So even Les was in on it. It's kind of, fuck, if Les is getting tainted by this and he was on the FIFA ethics committee, the whole thing's just a disgusting mess. And you know what? And out of all of this, out of all the millions of dollars they spent, they bribed, and all this effort, they got one vote. And I don't even think it was from anybody they bribed.
Yeah, it was the same guy that voted for Isaiah Thomas on all defensive.
Yeah. it was one of the guys who voted Kevin Durant fifth MVP. I do want to finish on our regular segment, how Red Bull fucked Dan Ricciardo this week. They didn't.
Yeah,
it was really weird. In fact, they've been fucking. Max has been copping it. Max keeps blowing up. Max Verstappen has failed to finish four out of the last six Grand Prix, whereas Ricciardo's finished on the podium every time, including at the frankly insane Azerbaijan Grand Prix, where as a result of a circumstance that involved people running into each other under the safety car and Lewis Hamilton's headrest falling out and just all manner of shit, Dan Ricciardo actually won the Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which will be great given that the Azerbaijan Grand Prix will probably last for another year or two and then get cancelled for being bullshit. And second place was held by the man described, or the boy described as the worst Formula One rookie in history by his fellow countryman Jacques Villeneuve, former Formula One world champion. So this is Lance Stroll, the 18-year-old Canadian kid with billionaire parents who's been kind of red carpeted through the junior formula and whose dad is now a big investor in Williams. Everyone's going, this is nepotismic bullshit. But the young bloke, this is the worst year for fucking probably generations to be a Formula One rookie because there's no testing and the cars are much more difficult than they've ever been. But he seemed to be getting his shit together. He qualified in the top 10 and he was running second right up until about 50 yards before the finish line, where he got overtaken on the final straight by Valtteri Bottas. But that's nice for him. So it was a really nice... but it was yet another... Dan Ricciardo's had five Grand Prix wins and almost all of them have been absolute burglaries where he has not had the fastest car, but he has stolen a win through being really clever, really crafty, and not being a fucking dick and crashing into people.
Whereas every time he has had a fast car, either Red Bull screwed it up or his car's broken down.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Oh, and
how many Grand Prix wins has Webber had?
Webber had nine, I think.
Okay, so he's still got a bit to catch him.
Yeah, and I think Lewis has. I don't know if Lewis has caught up with Ayrton Senna yet with 60 odd, but. Well, of course, Lewis and Seb Vettel had a little falling out because under one of the safety cars, Lewis Hamilton brake tested him in the middle of the last corner, and that resulted in Seb crashing into the back of him. Seb got really pissed off. He drove along beside him and banged wheels with him. Seb got a 10-second stop and go penalty for it, but post race, it's all blown up between Ferrari and Ferrari and Mercedes Mercedes sort of saying, "Well, we'll get you next time." You know, the whole fucking Dr. Claw, Inspector Gadget kind of
Gadget thing. Yeah, that's right, as he flies away.
And Nicky Lauda from Mercedes said, you know, one day Lewis will hit Sebastian, not with the car, but with his fist. And I was thinking, fuck, I'd like to see that on pay-per-view. But I think the thing is that Seb's a dad, and he's an old man, and he'll have that old man dad strength. I think Lewis would just get his...
Get his clock clean.
Get his fucking... get his earrings handed to him. So that's what, right, that's what's going on in the world.
Let's come back and talk some various very, very, very different tunes.
Let's do that thing.
All right. See you, mate.
All of that doesn't go on the podcast, obviously. That's right.